It is Wednesday, September 18th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Walton Arts Center presents R&B soul singer Aaron Neville Saturday, October 5th, in Baumwalker Hall. Neville will perform classic hits like Tears on My Pillow and Under the Boardwalk from his new doo-wop album. Tickets and more information are available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we continue our examination of the 2014 election season with a conversation with another candidate for state office. John Burkhalter is so far the lone Democrat seeking the lieutenant governor's office. He'll talk to Roby Brock about why he's running. Plus, a chance to step inside Sun's Chapel. The structure is on the National Historic Register of Places and is still a hub of community activity. And Samantha Fish will be in Fayetteville for the Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue Festival this week. Before she performs at George's Majestic Lounge, she'll play inside our Furman Garner Performance Studio. First, the Arkansas Insurance Department is partnering with the Clinton School of Public Service to host an open enrollment kickoff to mark the opening of the health insurance marketplace. More than 500,000 Arkansans are eligible for the health insurance coverage and can view plans offered through the marketplace at the event. Heather Haywood of the State Insurance Department says people ages 18 to 64 are eligible to come and receive assistance in setting up their coverage options.
We will have local guide organizations that will be on hand to assist people that are interested in enrolling. We'll be providing information about the new health insurance marketplace. We will also have the Department of Human Services on hand to assist those that might qualify for the private option. And we will also have members of the SHIP department on hand to address anybody that might have a Medicare question.
The event is scheduled for October 1st. That's the first day of enrollment for the health insurance marketplace. A proposed revision to planning regulations in downtown Fayetteville was introduced to the Fayetteville City Council last night, though at least 2 weeks will pass before it gets final approval. The ordinance, proposed by Alderman Sarah Marsh, would change building height and setback regulation exceptions for developments adjacent to single-family homes, particularly in the Fayetteville downtown area.
So it was during our recent deliberation over building height changes that it came to my attention that we have a dangerous loophole in our building codes. Currently, we have areas primarily in our downtown where there are no side or rear setbacks required and building heights of up to 84 feet are allowed. While in an ideal world, this promotes good urbanism, in our downtown area, this has the potential to create conflicts and adversely affect the quality of life for downtown residents.
The current regulations, as developed for the city's downtown master plan, allow for zero side setbacks, meaning the maximum 84-foot high walls could be built on property lines. As it was presented last night, the proposed revisions would call for a minimum side and rear setback of 15 feet from property lines and that building heights be limited to 30 feet at that setback distance. But the revisions were tabled at the first reading as Alderperson Marsh and City Development Services Jeremy Pate acknowledged the proposal was too broad in scope because it failed to take building scale into account.
For instance, a two-story walk-up live-work unit has the same standard applied as a large 3 or 5 acre, you know, six-story building. So we want to really look at the scale of that and see how we can address that, because a two-story walk-up unit may even be smaller in scale than the adjacent single-family home. So we really want to look carefully at how those are applied, particularly on the smaller lots that we see is most impacted by a 15-foot setback.
Pate says there are several lots in the downtown area that are 40 to 50 feet wide and adjacent to current single-family homes, and that the proposal would limit development of those lots for most uses other than for single-family homes. The issue will return to the City Council in 2 weeks. A number of school elections were held across the region yesterday, several of which included proposals asking voters for millage increases for construction of new facilities. The most watched of those elections was for a $2.9 million increase for construction of a second high school in the Bentonville School District. The measure was the third such proposal that had been given to voters in the past 5 years. This time, it passed overwhelmingly, with more than 8,200 voters in favor of the millage package and just under 3,500 voting against it. Meanwhile, voters in Prairie Grove approved a $6 million increase for an addition and safe room to the school district's intermediate school, as well as construction of a new high school basketball arena. More than 480 people in Prairie Grove voted in favor of that increase. 328 voted against. And West Fork Public Schools will be able to build an addition to the school's choir and band building, as well as new classrooms, restrooms, and a physical education building at the middle school after voters there approved a 2 mil tax increase. But not all millage proposals were approved yesterday. A proposed 1.2 millage increase in Alma failed at the ballot box. 1,048 voting against, just 668 voting for the measure. It would have allowed the school district to hire armed guards and add as many as 250 surveillance cameras throughout the district. The University of Arkansas in Fort Smith will have a new visual arts building in the coming years. According to thecitywire.com, the university announced yesterday it had received a $15.5 million grant from the Siloam Springs-based Wingate Charitable Foundation to go toward construction of the 58,000-square-foot building. UAFS will have to match $2.5 million of the grant, but the new facility will be located on the southwest corner of Waldron and Kincaid Avenues next to the Stubblefield Center. When completed in 2015, the building will be home to gallery spaces, graphic design laboratories, a 150-seat film theater, as well as have spaces for photography, painting, sculpture, and art history. The Rehabilitation Counseling Program at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville is being recognized as a leader in the field. According to a recent article in Rehabilitation Counseling Bulletin, researchers rank the College of Education and Health Professions academic 8th in the nation when looking at the number of research articles published by faculty in peer-reviewed publications. Additionally, U.S. News and World Report has repeatedly ranked the rehabilitation program in the top 20 graduate rehabilitation programs nationally, and it is currently listed at 16th place by that publication. According to the article in Rehabilitation Counseling Bulletin, a positive correlation exists between research productivity of an institution and its U.S. News ranking. And the U of A has been ranked again among the top 15% of colleges and universities across the country, included in this year's Guide to Military-Friendly Schools. The guide is published by Victory Media, a veteran-owned publisher that works to help U.S. military veterans transition into civilian life. This is the fifth year the University of Arkansas has been included in the guide. New efforts to engage student veterans in the past year include the Chancellor's Challenge Coin Award, which began in May and is given to student veterans when they graduate. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows expected to be in the upper 60s. Tomorrow, partly sunny. There's a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow throughout the region should be around 90. And tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. Showers and thunderstorms likely. For Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, lows will be around 70. This is Ozarks at Large. The field for the 2014 election in Arkansas continues to take shape. The race for lieutenant governor has, as of this morning, three announced candidates. Two men are seeking the GOP nomination for the office, Charlie Collins of Fayetteville and Andy Mayberry of Hensley. There is one Democrat declared in the race, John Burkhalter of Little Rock. He is a former member of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission and a current Arkansas Highway Commissioner. Recently, he sat down with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas to discuss why he's running for the lieutenant governor's position.
I'm a business guy. I'm not a politician. I grew up in Arkansas in Sylvan Hills, north of the river, which is now Sherwood. And I had the opportunity to go to Fayetteville, where I got my engineering degree. And I practiced engineering for many years in Arkansas. And then along the course of my travels and my business career, I had the opportunity to start a company. And when I started, Roby, I didn't come from a family of influence as far as money or politics or anything like that. And I really didn't have two nickels to rub together. I was probably pretty well not prepared to be a businessman. But I started my business. I couldn't even get any capital. I couldn't get a business loan for a couple of years. And I built my business with a credit card and good credit, which is important. And through the course of a lot of hard work and some luck and a lot of people supporting me and helping me, I was able to build several businesses in the state of Arkansas and creating a lot of jobs. And Arkansas has been great to me. And as the next lieutenant governor, that's very important to me that I have the opportunity to give back to my state.
I want to talk about one of your big business successes is one that I've read about and I know a lot about in terms of you invented something. And tell a little bit of people about that invention and kind of what that did, what that meant for your business career.
Well, I'm a civil engineer, and when I was practicing engineering, I had the opportunity to rehab a lot of sewer systems, mainly on military bases in Louisiana and Arkansas. And during the course of figuring out the best way to fix water and sewer systems, I started to work on an idea. And there were some other business guys that came to me. We put our ideas together, and I moved to Texas for a short amount of time, and I helped perfect this product, came back to Arkansas. I've always refused to leave Arkansas. When I graduated from Fayetteville, I had a lot of job opportunities, but I wanted to stay in Arkansas, and I've always done that. And so it was an underground pipeline system where you rehab water and sewer lines with a trenchless technology where you actually do not have to dig the lines up. So you actually put a brand new pipe in the old pipe. It saves money because it doesn't disturb other utilities that are underground or the paving.
And it paid good dividends for you.
I lived my Arkansas dream, my American dream. Yeah. And I think other people should have that opportunity. I've been very blessed. This country's done so much for me and my family. And I really believe I want to devote my life. And that's my game plan, is to devote my life to my state and public service to help others have the opportunity that I had. I think we need to create jobs for new entrepreneurs, people like me that want to have the ability to have access to capital and grow businesses. Of course, the businesses are here. We've got to support them. We've got to help them find capital. And also, we've got to have an educated workforce so those companies can grow. And then, of course, I have had the opportunity to sell my technology around the world. And I've traveled a lot, and I've traded a lot overseas. And I'm willing to get on a plane or a train and go anywhere in the world to help bring those businesses to Arkansas, because we're not just competing against ourselves and other states. We're competing against the world. But to be able to bring these companies, we have to prove that we've got the work, the educated workforce to fill those jobs, not just higher ed, but also career tech. We need more plumbers, electricians, and pipe fitters in our state.
You you've been around politics for a long time. A couple decades I've known you and been around politics with you. This is your first foray into elective politics, although you, as I mentioned earlier, you've been appointed to a couple positions. What made you decide to run for this office? Because I know you flirted and talked about running for governor for quite some time before you pivoted to this lieutenant governor's race. So maybe explain what went into that decision.
That's a good question, because I did look at running for governor. I've always been interested in getting involved in politics in my state to help my state. And it wasn't like I grew up that I was going to get into politics. I grew up, if you could have a split-level house, a black-and-white television, and a car, I mean, you had really made it. And, you know, that is the Arkansas dream, American dream, although we have color televisions now, but I grew up with a black-and-white television. But I think it's important that whoever's going to be the next lieutenant governor, that he brings a great skill set. And we're in tough economic times now, and we've still got a long ways to go. And I know how to create jobs. I had the opportunity to get a great education in Arkansas, and I want to put that to work to focus on make sure that we create more jobs for our citizens so tomorrow will be better than today.
You were impressed with Mike Ross as the Democratic nominee for governor, or a Democratic candidate for governor. The field's cleared right now. And that was that part of what factored into your decision to run for lieutenant governor instead of for governor?
Mike and I have been friends a long time. And our families are friends. And Mike and I, throughout the course of the last year, had many, many conversations. And he always was concerned what's important to me and what's important to him. And always at the forefront, it's been creating jobs and giving back to my state and focusing on what I could really do best. And I think that Mike and I will work great together as a team. As you know, Mike and I have talked about an economic development commission, and I've been chair of that commission. And I think it's very important to the state of Arkansas that we make sure all of our agencies are working together as we move forward, because there's a lot of competition out there. And as I've mentioned, it's not just in the states that bound us, it's the world out there.
Do you think, let's just hypothetically here, you win for lieutenant governor, but the Republican nominee wins for governor. What would be your role at that point in time in terms of lieutenant governor?
I will approach that position, that job, no different. I will be vocal. I will be sure that anyone and everyone knows what I think we need to do. I've always had a piece of paper in my life. I have short-term goals and long-term goals, and I will make sure the next governor, whoever that person might be, understands how important job creation, real job creation, and educating our people and preparing them for that. And I believe anybody that's governor is going to want to listen and work together. We're all Arkansans. We're all in this together. We need to be all pulling on the same end of this rope.
Do you really think you can make a difference creating jobs? I've heard a lot of governors and lieutenant governors talk about that in the past. I see where the power of the governorship can do that. When Rockefeller, for instance, was a lieutenant governor who talked a lot about job creation, I never heard him brag about creating any jobs, although I suspect he probably had some influence there, but you never saw his fingerprints on some of that. Can you really do something in that position?
Well, when Rockefeller wasn't a guy that bragged, I mean, we all miss him, and it's terrible that he's gone, and he never was a guy that bragged. He did a lot for a lot of people out there, but I think that you can make it whatever you want to be.
John Burkholder is the only announced Democrat seeking the lieutenant governor's office in the 2014 Arkansas election. Two Republicans, Charlie Collins and Andy Mayberry, have announced they want the GOP nomination for the job. John Burkholder recently talked with Roby Brock from Talk Business Arkansas as part of Roby's series of conversations with candidates seeking statewide office. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon communication store near you or online at vzw.com/smallbusiness. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at cegpartners.com.
This week in This American Life, it is a very popular drug. Every week, one out of six Americans take some. I'm talking about acetaminophen, the active ingredient in Tylenol. And it also kills more people than any other over-the-counter painkiller. Over 150 Americans die each year, on average, from accidentally taking too much, according to the federal government. It takes a lot less to endanger you than you may know. This week.
Listen Sundays at 10 a.m. to KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Yesterday on our program, we had a story about the efforts statewide to get more places in Arkansas connected to high-speed internet. One advantage of making those connections would be allowing state residents to complete their college degrees. For the past 5 years, there has been a building in South Fayetteville that's been helping many residents complete their GED or get their high school diplomas. Yesterday, the Adult Education Center celebrated 5 years in its location at the former Jefferson Elementary School. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda was there for the ceremony.
Yesterday morning, Fayetteville Adult and Community Education hosted an open house to celebrate 5 years of residence in the old Jefferson Elementary School building. Kathy Spigarelli, Director of Adult and Community Education in Fayetteville, says it's an exciting milestone. She says staff members are excited every day they walk into the building because it's a wonderful environment for them to work in.
The students love it. We love it. It's very warm. We have space. We've been able to expand programs because we have the space to do that. And it's just been a great experience. And we feel like we have saved this building in a certain sense because it had fallen into some neglect because it had been empty for several years. And an empty building just doesn't do well.
Spigarelli, who's held her position for about 10 years, says they were previously located in a small building at the edge of Walker Park. She says it was about 5,000 square feet, and they simply outgrew the space.
I had teachers teaching out of what used to be closets. We just made them small classrooms. So we were just on top of each other. Noise was a problem. You could hear each other teaching. Testing was always in an uproar because they could hear everybody So this has just been wonderful.
Spigarelli says the Jefferson Elementary building sat empty for some time while people tried to decide what to do with it. When her old building became too crowded, she asked former Fayetteville Public School Superintendent Bobby New if they could work out a way for them to have the space. They did, and the Jefferson Center opened 5 years ago. Spigarelli says the new location in and of itself has helped with community outreach.
Every week we have people stop at that stoplight on College and Martin Luther King and see our phone number on the marquee and call while they're at the stoplight and say, "Oh, is this where I get my GED?" "Yes, it is." "Oh, well, I'm at the stoplight. Now I know where to come." So, you know, what can I say? Location, location, location. Yeah, it's perfect.
Preparing adults to earn their GED is just one of the services they offer and will continue to offer, even as the format of the test is scheduled to change at the beginning of the year.
December 13th is the last of this paper pencil GED exam. Starting January 1, it will be a totally computer-based program. It will cost $120. It won't be free, but we will have scholarship money available. You have to meet certain criteria in attendance and certain scores, and then I'll be able to pay for your GED test. So basically, you know, very little, it'll still be free. And it will be based on Common Core standards, so the test is changing completely.
Spigarelli says they have new people start every day, as well as students finishing every day. In addition to the Jefferson Center, they also teach classes in Prairie Grove, on site at various businesses, and offer a distance learning program for those with high-speed internet access. All told, she estimates they serve about 1,500 Washington County residents annually. Thanks to funding from state and federal grants, these classes are offered at no charge to students. Despite this, Spigarelli and her staff still face a number of challenges, including decreasing funding, ending barriers that keep students from gaining more education, such as transportation and childcare, and spreading the word about the services they provide. In addition to GED prep courses, they also offer a number of other programs, such as English as a Second Language and citizenship classes.
Our students are non-traditional students, but we prepare people to go to college, help them with applications, finding financial aid, what's it really like, do workshops with them, and also the big feared math class. We have a college prep math class. So that before you take a compass test, you can come to us for free. And this is for everybody, even if you have a high school diploma. You can come to us first, take our class for free, and test out of remedial math. Because if you don't, you're going to pay full tuition and be in a class that you don't get any credit for. And so that's a biggie. We also are the Wage Center for Washington County. And what the WAGE program is an employability skills program. We have business partners that tell us what they need in their workers, and we create certificates, criteria, where students earn certificates that these employers then recognize when they go to hire people.
The Jefferson Center is open from 8:30 a.m. until 7:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and they also offer fee-based community education programs. These classes include Italian, Spanish, ballroom dancing, art classes, and welding. Signups for these classes are going on now, and they start next week. More information is available at fayar.net/adult-ed.
It is Wednesday, September 18th, 2013. With me is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The last day we'll be able to hear ourselves.
Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, really today.
Starts today.
Yeah.
But there's some new excitement this year. As we figured out last weekend, bikes can fly.
Because there's an air show component.
Well, okay, they really can't. But a B-29 Super Fortress can fly. And a B-24 Liberator and a P-51 Mustang and an SB-2C dive bomber and a Boeing Stearman.
Now, will all of these be flying while they're here?
Yes. These are the ones that are coming, courtesy of the Commemorative Air Force. It's interesting. I wrote about them. They used to be called the Confederate Air Force. They have no museum. They have no real home base. People keep the planes that are part of their collection. And when it's time to show them off, they do. They say that Fifi, the B-29 Superfortress is the world's only flying Superfortress from World War II, and you can get rides in it.
And it's huge and it's loud. I've been inside a B-29 Superfortress before.
So while this starts, arrival for the B-29 is about noon tomorrow. Gates open around 2 at Drake Field. Cockpit tours start then. Friday, gates open at 9. The B-29 flies at 9 a.m. Cockpit tours after 10:30. About the same schedule on Saturday and Sunday. And you can find out more at airpowersquadron.org.
All right. Look to the skies. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. In about 15 minutes, Samantha Fish, a rising star in the blues world, will play inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, a session she recorded for KUAF's The Generic Blues Show with Paul Kelso. She'll be live at George's Majestic Lounge tonight and tomorrow night. You can get a preview just ahead on Ozarks. We've launched a new series on the program in the past couple of months dedicated to special spaces, places many of us would not be able to get to during the course of a normal day, or spaces we've just been curious about. What's inside or what happens inside that place? For our latest field trip, Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas goes inside a place that's been here for some time. It's a common sight for people traveling between Fayetteville and Goshen on Highway 45. Sun's Chapel. The building was placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2006 and sits on land that was a community once known as Sun's Chapel and is adjacent to the Sun's Chapel Cemetery. As Christina found out, the chapel along the highway was built more than 8 decades ago, and after years of passing by it herself, Christina decided to go inside.
Growing up on North Sassafras Hill Road, east of Fayetteville, and returning to live in my childhood home 5 years ago, I have driven past Sun's Chapel on Highway 45 most days of my life. Though I have admired it from afar, I had never stopped to explore the grounds, peeked in a window, or stepped foot inside this little rock church.
We're a little sad that so many people go by here and have never been in.
Until Tuesday, when Tricia Beland showed me around.
So here is our chapel. Seats about 100. We have had to replace pew covers and rugs, but otherwise it's very much like it was originally.
Originally, when Sun's Chapel was completed in 1939. Tricia Beland is the historian for a group of women called the Rural Builders, started by four women with the main purpose of building this chapel 91 years ago. History says this land was once owned by the Sun family in the mid to late 1800s. There was a chapel of sorts, a wooden building on the edge of the cemetery across the street, though the date of its demise is unknown. Clearly, before 1922, the date that the women in the community came together to begin raising money for construction of the current chapel.
And they were farm women. They did what they knew how to raise money, which was make quilts and sell them, have little craft get-togethers. They made lunches and sold them at cattle auctions. They put on dramatic performances and charged some amount of money. And 1922, it took them until 1939 to actually finish the building because there was a world war, there was a depression, and their husbands did a lot of the labor. They had to hire a few local craftsmen. But a building doesn't like go up as quickly as they do now.
Nor do the costs compare. With $1,400, after 10 years of fundraising, construction began. A formal plaque nested in among the brown and gray rock on the northeast corner of the chapel commemorates its dedication in 1940.
Sons Chapel, conceived by the Rural Builders Club, 1922, quoted, "With the Lord's help and our husbands, we can and will do it." Chapel completed 1939, and the cornerstone is in memory of David Robert Henson, 1921-1991. The Henson family were early residents of the area, and his daughter, Linda Lilly, Henson Lilly, was a longtime member and officer and died within the last few years.
The colorful stained glass with the dove that makes up the top portion of the front window of the chapel was donated by the Henson family. Back inside, if you look out this same window, you'll see a tall and sprawling sycamore tree that is as old as the chapel itself. The church is and always has been non-denominational and never actually held church services, though Sunday school was held each Sunday until 1996.
The community used to come have a Sunday adult Sunday school upstairs, children's Sunday school downstairs, and then be released in time to drive into town to go to the church of their choice. Buddy Crouch, who is just recently deceased, was the last one.
The pulpit, about 30 feet across from that stained glass window, held a buzzer for the adults to alert the children in the basement that they were finished with their studies. The 20 or so pews are showing their years, as is the brown particle board that makes up the walls and ceilings. Beelin says that it's no longer made, and it's expensive to have it repaired or replaced. Two original light fixtures of gold and clouded glass hang over either side of pews, in between ceiling fans that were later installed. Though a gas furnace was put in during original construction, air conditioning was just recently installed. Sons Chapel has about 10 weddings per year, and brides are not as inclined to stand in the heat in their attire as they once were. Weddings are just one way that the rural builders raise money to maintain the church. As the group is still active, fundraising and upkeep are its main goals. And keeping with the tasks of the original members, a second way they earn dollars is with quilt sales. Every Tuesday morning, hence the day of my visit, a group of 20 or so ladies meet in the basement of the chapel to quilt.
I have a seat right here and okay. We'll just visit. I'm Jeanette Loris. We quilt to raise money.
This is Liz.
And Eloise.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
We're the fundraising group for the chapel. And we basically do it. The quilts, we quilt. Most of them are hand embroidered. Some of them are machine embroidered, but very low percentage. We sell the quilts, and this has been an ongoing fundraiser for probably about 20 years. And it also brings in many new members. So,
though knowing how to quilt is quite helpful, it isn't a requirement for joining Rural Builders. Jeanette learned when she joined. And though Tricia tried to learn, they made her the historian. Embroidering the centerpiece for a baseball-themed quilt is Susie Shelton McCray, a third-generation rural builder.
My grandmother was one of the four ladies that started the Rural Builders Club 90 years ago. They decided that we needed a church in the neighborhood, and they raised every penny. Some of the men helped with the work, but the women raised all the money that went into it.
Her grandmother lived right down the hill on Shelton Road. Susie was 8 when her family moved there. She fondly remembers Sunday school and other community events held at the chapel. The site also held a one-room school from 1890 until 1949, when it was moved down the other side of the hill and turned into a residence. Susie attended that school for the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and part of the 6th grade. She was also the first bride to marry in the chapel in 1948. And though she lived elsewhere for 60 years, she returned here every year, even embroidering from her home in Wichita Falls, Texas. She came back for good almost 3 years ago. Emerging from the historian's collection is a black and white photo.
This is my mom. And this is my grandmother. And that's Mrs. Robinson, who was one of the four. And that's Mrs. Brazil, who was one of the four. And I have Mother's little sailor hat. I collect hats. So this is our, when we celebrated our anniversary. And I think that was just last year. So, and that's me. So,
the chapel earned a spot on the National Register for Historic Places in 2003 and recently became a 501c3. Fundraising efforts are underway for a landscaping project in conjunction with the University of Arkansas School of Architecture in anticipation of a celebration in 2015 for the 75th anniversary of the dedication of Sons Chapel. In addition to quilting, weddings, and memorial services, the Rural Builders for Sons Chapel hold a donation-based soup lunch the third Tuesday of each month. And trust me, it's well worth the visit. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
If there is a place, any kind of space, you're interested in hearing more about, let us know. Our special spaces stories are part of our program every third Wednesday of the month. You can make a suggestion for our special spaces series by sending us an email, ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
What does it mean to join Brazil's new middle class?
Justamente em 2012 também que ele comprou.
For Enilda de Carvalho, it means a new TV, microwave, and hopes that her daughters will have an easier life.
Para que elas tenham melhor futuro do que o que nós tivemos.
Brazil's new middle class, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered this afternoon, beginning at 3 on KUAF. And also beginning this afternoon, in fact, you can probably, if you listen closely, hear behind me motorcycles. Also beginning this afternoon in Fayetteville and around the Northwest Arkansas area is the annual Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue Festival. It will continue through Sunday. It is not the only event that takes place in the next couple of weeks throughout our region. The Arkansas Attorney General's Office will bring the Freedom of Information Act roadshow to Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville later this month. The workshop, one of five to be held around the state, is intended to help public officials better understand how to deal with FOI laws. The workshop is also open to anybody else wanting to know more about the role of Freedom of Information Acts. While the September 27th session is free and is open to the public, registration is required. You can register by sending an email to info@arkansaspress.org or by calling 501-374-1500. That workshop is on the 27th. It's a Friday, and it will take place from 9 in the morning until 12:30 in the afternoon. Free help for area homeowners that are possibly facing foreclosure will be offered during several Thursday sessions at the Fayetteville Public Library. The University of Arkansas School of Law will have free walk-in clinics at the library on four Thursdays this fall. The first such opportunity, Thursday, September 26th. Students at the U of A Law School and a supervising attorney will be on hand to provide answers to questions about mortgages and loan modifications. The clinics are free and they require no advance appointment. Clinics were made possible with a grant from the Arkansas Attorney General's Office. Each of the Thursdays, which are September 26th, October 10th, October 24th, and November 7th, will feature both a midday and evening session. The midday session from 11 until 1 at the library, the evening session from 5 until 7. If you'd like more information, law.uark.edu/clinic/foreclosure. We'll have the websites and the phone numbers for these events on the Ozarks at Large webpage today. Monday, September 30th, representatives from the Walmart Home Office in Bentonville will participate in a panel discussion about the value of college degrees in the STEM field, STEM, meaning science, technology, engineering, and math, on the University of Arkansas campus. The session from 5:30 until 7:30 the evening of the 30th is aimed at UA students and will allow students a chance to ask the Walmart representatives about their careers. The panel will meet in room 510 of the Arkansas Union Monday, September 30th. Speaking of college students, Saturday at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art has been designated just for college students and college faculty. Saturday, Crystal Bridges will offer several sessions, including a flash mob workshop, an open jam session, and more on the museum campus. There will also be a collaborative sculpture project underway. Robert Norman, who lives in Eureka Springs, will be creating, I think it would be pronounced, fear I'm not sure how it'd be pronounced. It's spelled S-P-H-E-R-E-X-O-X. According to Crystal Bridges, the sculpture will be created by students and guests who decorate sticks. The finished work is expected to be able to rotate and will be lit with LED lights for the Light Night Party that begins Saturday night at 7:30 at Crystal Bridges. Students will also be able to connect in the Network Lounge to learn more about Crystal Bridges College Ambassadors Program and meet museum staff. You can learn more about Saturday's College Day at crystalbridges.org. There will also be a scavenger hunt. And a week from Saturday, September 28th, the 4th annual Eureka Palooza Outdoor Festival will take place over 12 hours at Lake Leatherwood Fields. There will be music, there will be food, there will be games, a beer garden, there will be bouncy castles. The festival will include performances from several bands, including Dime Trip, Signs of Warning, and National Park Radio, a band that will be on Ozarks at Large a week from Friday. The festival begins at 11 a.m. Saturday the 28th, will continue until 11 that night. And Sunday, September 29th, a week from this Sunday, after Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, the crew at Maxine's Tap Room will host their second The All You Need to Know show. The idea is simple and pretty clever. Pick a word at random and then ask area writers, musicians, poets, and artists to create a work or performance based on that word. This month's word is bicycle. The artists have had 30 days to create their original work. Each work is followed by a question and answer session from the on-site fact checker. The show is free and at Maxine's on Block Avenue in downtown Fayetteville. Doors will open on the 29th at 5. The show itself will begin at 7. Quickly, a couple of area college sports teams in action tomorrow. The John Brown University volleyball team is on the road tomorrow evening to face number 10 Oklahoma Baptist. You can watch live video at the JBU Athletics website. And the Northeastern State University women's soccer team will host Northwestern State University. That match tomorrow night at 7 on the Northeastern State campus in Tahlequah. And finally, there are some changes that are taking place at our all-news HD channel, KUAF3. Beginning today, there will be another chance for you to hear Ozarks at Large. Each day's program will now be re-aired at 5 p.m. on KUAF3. You can pick up that channel on any HD radio. You can also pick it up online at KUAF.com. You can hear it using the KUAF app for tablets and smartphones. That app is free. More programs, many of them previously unavailable in our area, will soon be added to the KUAF3 schedule, so stay tuned. And as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue is, as of today, underway on the streets of Fayetteville and surrounding Northwest Arkansas. If you're anywhere close to downtown Fayetteville in the next few days, you'll certainly hear the bikes. And if you step into George's Majestic Lounge tonight or tomorrow night, you'll be able to hear one of the highlights of this year's roster of blues players. Samantha Fish, though just in her mid-20s, has already established herself as one of the blues guitarists to watch. The Kansas City native released her second CD, Black Wind Howlin', earlier this month, and she recently came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio inside KUAF to play a few songs for Paul Kelso on his program, The Generic Blues Show. Here's one of the numbers from that session, an original titled Let's Have Some Fun.
All right, this is going to be one off my new record that's coming out this summer, so.
Great.
Yeah. Your sweet little girl.
I'm not your friend. Oh, honey, not anymore.
Earrings as percussion. It's like, shake, shake, shake.
Samantha Fish, recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF for the Generic Blues Show, which is hosted every Friday night by Paul Kelso. You can hear the Generic Blues Show Friday nights at 8. Samantha Fish will perform at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville tonight and tomorrow night. You can learn more about the shows at georgesmajesticlounge.com. Her latest compact disc, Black Wind Howlin', was released last week. And you can learn more about her at her website, SamanthaFish.com.
What do stories tell us about who we are?
We all want affirmations that our lives have meaning. And nothing does a greater affirmation than when we connect through stories. It can cross the barriers of time and allow us to experience the similarities between ourselves and through others, real and imagined.
I'm Guy Raz, framing the story. That's on the next TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen Sunday at noon to KUAF 91.3 FM.
TED Radio Hour, Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. KUAF is supported by Ben Owen Shelter Insurance Agency, providing auto, home, and life insurance. 582-4990 for more information. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. Walton Arts Center presents Onda Union Friday, October 4th, as part of the 10x10 Art Series. These musicians will travel across the globe to perform traditional folk music from Inner Mongolia, including throat singing and unusual instruments. Tickets and more information available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelms, bringing in Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas. How are you?
I'm doing all right on this Wednesday.
Welcome to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Ozarks, you have a story about a sort of cottage industry, kind of a pun there, with Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue.
Right. In recent years, a lot of people have been renting out their homes, either to make a little bit of extra money or just to get away. Well, you know, Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue is going on. So,
and you talked to a couple of homeowners, some who are doing it this year and some who've done it in the past.
Right.
That's on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large that you and I will co-host.
Yes.
Speaking of Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, we're going to use that festival. And it is, I think, more than any other event in Northwest Arkansas, even more than Razorback football, which, of course, can take over the town of Fayetteville. But Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue is the most obvious change of life.
I mean, Dixon Street is just jam-packed.
I drove to Avoca last night for a story that will also be on tomorrow's show about Two Brothers Canoes for our Locally Made series. And going along, as I left Rogers toward Avoca, there's a Harley store there, and they were getting ready. So it is Eureka Springs gets ready.
Right.
It is a major event. Some people really like it. Some people really don't. I think a lot of us are in the middle and just... It's what happens once a year in the fall.
So.
But we're going to use Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue as a launching pad for a creative contest. If you win this contest, you will receive two tickets to a Malco Theater and a brand new Three Penny Acre CD, Rag and Bone.
Love that CD.
Yeah. So they, of course, help put together the Roots Festival. So for this BB and BBQ inspired contest, we'll give you that CD plus two Malco movie passes. Here's the idea. If Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue were held in Fayetteville 100 years ago, or if it were held 100 years in the future, what would the three Bs stand for?
You told me this question about 5 minutes ago, and I've been sitting here trying to come up with one. I'm not getting very far.
Well, I've got an idea of what it might have been in 1913.
Okay.
I don't know for 2113, but the rules are simple. Use three things that begin with B, so we're going for alliteration, just like Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. And, you know, I mean, for the past, make it something that existed in Fayetteville in 1913. The future, you can be wide open. We'll give away the package to one winner.
One winner.
So either someone from the past or in the future. Creativity. We'll have an independent judge who doesn't see your name pick them.
Okay. And send those to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. And I'm going to try to come up with a good one for tomorrow.
Okay. Because you'll help me. You're not going to pick the winner. We'll have
somebody else. No.
Maybe we'll just go on Dixon Street and have someone who's participating in Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue pick it. But again, so be inspired by the letters BBB and tell me what that would have meant had this festival been held in 1913 or what it might mean if it's still going on in 2113. Be as creative as you want, and we'll read some of our favorites and then the winner on tomorrow's edition. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF, Fayetteville, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Avoca. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great Wednesday.